Mortgages should be illegal because you're getting robbed every month. With a typical $200,000 30-year mortgage, you'll end up paying over $400,000 after interest. Hi, I'm John Commuta, creator of the Transforming Debt into Wealth system. My proven system can eliminate your mortgage and all your debts. Let me send you a powerful free CD. For your free CD, call 1-800-933-2911. 1-800-933-2911. 1-800-933-2911.
Blog Talk Radio. You're listening to the Link to Leadership Radio Network.
This is Leadership Radio. Leadership Radio is sponsored by Cox Business Consulting. This is Tom on Leadership.
And this is Tom Cox, your host for Tom on Leadership here on the Link to Leadership Radio Network. Today's episode is about estimating and forecasting. And first, a quick look at some recent episodes. Not long ago, I was listening to a podcast with Jim Collins, the author of Good to Great and many other fine books. He said the number one most important thing for a CEO is to hire well. That's why I was so glad to have Wendy Kent come on and do Recruiting 101 for CEOs. That's a recent episode. We also had Karen O'Keefe give us five steps of negotiation. And prior to that, the CEO's Guide to Optimism and Purpose. So important to keep your mental game sharp. And we got some terrific guidance from Susan Steinbrecher, three-time Tom on Leadership guest. And that's from her recent book. And now let's talk about today's episode, and that is forecasting and estimating. And this is the kind of thing that sometimes we leave it to experts. And I don't know that there's wise to necessarily do that. If your CFO or your controller or your CPA or whoever it is you're relying on for your numbers is really, really good, maybe they're already doing all this stuff correctly. But remember, ultimately, if you're the business owner or you're the CEO or you've got P&L responsibility at any level, really it's up to you to be sure that it's done the way it needs to be done. And if nothing else, this prepares you to proofread and ask intelligent questions of the people who are doing the budgeting and the forecasting. And you may want to get your hands on this and do a little back-of-the-envelope forecasting yourself. And we're going to learn how to do that. The reality is that well over 90% of business forecasts are significantly flawed, according to our guest, and we'll see whether you agree with her by the end of this this podcast. I'm really glad to have on this guest for this topic. We've done a very good job in our 2.5 years here on Tom on Leadership and the 30,000 listeners we've had with really pairing up with good guests with good topics. We get terrific feedback. And please go to TomOnLeadership.com and leave us more feedback. And this is no exception of having the right expert for the right topic. We have an efficiency expert, someone who brings more than 2 decades of proven expertise in supporting individuals and businesses in their efforts to reach higher levels of efficiency and effectiveness. She has a real gift for seeing the not-so-obvious in cause and effect. And she really treats causes, not symptoms. And so please join me in welcoming to Tom on Leadership, Lynn White. Lynn, thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks, Tom. It's a pleasure to be here.
And I was so intrigued when we first cooked up this topic about forecasting, which I know is tremendously important, especially if you want to impress a bank, for instance, as you give them your monthly forecast a month in advance and then see if you hit it or not. If you can be pretty consistent with your forecast, the banks really love you and want to lend you money, not to mention it makes you really good at understanding your own business. It's really, I think, incumbent, it's vital on anybody with P&L responsibility to be able to forecast their results. And I'll admit, I don't do it. When I do it, I don't think I do a very good job. It's probably why I don't do it as much as I could.
That's pretty common. You know, it's the business forecasting is kind of an interesting beast. It has a mind of its own. There's a lot of different techniques out there. There's well over 17 different, you know, real solid professional models to use. And then there's, of course, the serial entrepreneur who brings their own style to it, and the sole proprietor or a small business bringing your own. And so there's definitely a lot of variables that can impact the forecast and the methods that you're using.
And one of the reasons you want to do forecasting and have kind of a good performance model and a forecasting model is you know when to hire who and when not to hire, and you'll be able to control your costs so much better. I recently had a chance to interview the folks who run a very well respected organization called the Partners Group. They've grown between 8 and 20% every year for 17 years, and they've been widely regarded in the community as providing stellar quality of service, and their workforce consistently votes like one of the best places to work. And when I talked to their founders and the partners who run the place, they said they are very, very deliberate about forecasting their ability to do work and only taking on the clients they know they can serve well. And they've never tried to grow faster than what they can properly digest, my word, not theirs. And they could never do that without forecasting. And that kind of rigor and seriousness and discipline and professionalism really differentiates the very well-run organization from the kind of seat-of-the-pants organization. So I'm looking forward to finding out what you're going to teach us here about business forecasting.
So true. I love it.
So tell us a little bit of why you think business forecasting accuracy is so important, particularly today.
Well, you know, we're in very different times today than we ever have been, and businesses are being forced to operate and thrive in a different way. They have to shift the way that they're operating around business forecasting. It's almost like the level of accuracy has got to go up in order to take them into the next generation. And you can kind of see some examples of how business accuracy or inaccuracy, as the case may be, has had a ripple effect through business. You know, for example, right now we're in very uncertain times. There's a ton of hesitation. People feel really vulnerable. You add to that, as we go into 2012, it's an election year. It's a leap year. There's the emotion around the December-November timeframe of the proverbial end of the world. And then you add to that projections like the U.S. economy is expected to only grow about 2% in 2012. So, you know, you look through the past, you look at the current situation, and it's just very clear that businesses have got to do a better job at their forecasting, because we are in times that are so vulnerable and unpredictable. And it's a testament to looking at the big picture. So you go out and you say, wow, 2012 is an election year. Things don't always go the same during an election year. And how do you take information about an election year or the economy growth or the emotions running and pull information down into your forecast that will increase the accuracy of that forecast? You have a higher success rate and potential for success. An example of that.
Okay, now you got me really interested, because I didn't think any of those things mattered to my performance. I just figured I'd go out and, you know, work real hard and try hard and do my best. And you're telling me that things like that there's external variables that I actually can use to make my forecasts more accurate.
Absolutely. You know, in 2012, with it being an election year, it's proven over and over again that buying patterns shift in election years.
Really?
Absolutely. It's just profound when you start to look into the psychology of election years, the impact that it has on buying and spending, and how that goes down into business, and how businesses actually have to shift their forecasting and just adjust the way that they do business in election years, which no one ever does, or at least the majority of them don't. So they might start to look at, buying patterns are different in that election year, so it's a testament to really paying attention to these factors. And how do you know, you're going to take that into your forecast, so you might adjust where you think projections are going to go in any given month around that election time frame.
So you've worked, of course, with a lot of companies who want to either start forecasting or do forecasting better. What do you see as the state of the art out there today for your typical business? What's the reality?
The reality is a lot of forecasting is comprised of using last year's performance or the past 2 or 3 years' performance numbers, maybe doing a quick snapshot of what competitors are doing. It has sometimes to do with the board of directors might have a target that they bring down, or your investor has a target that they bring down that they want you to get. And so there's a lot of these components that are going into forecasting that aren't really based in reality. Those are all, you know, your past is your past. It doesn't dictate your future, so let's not worry about that. Your competitors are your competitors. Don't worry about them. Just do what you know how to do. Do it really well and take care of your customers, and you don't need to worry about your competitors. Your board and your investors, key component, money source. So it's a process of taking what they're looking for, but then going out into reality, what's happening in the business climate, what's happening, bigger picture, and how do you merge all that together so that you build a forecast based on reality while you're doing target forecasting versus what everyone does now is what's called target forecasting. And it inevitably leads everyone to these vicious circles of every month they're tweaking the forecast, they're adjusting the forecast, they're spending 2 hours preparing for their board meeting because the numbers have to be shifted, and then you come back down into the business and you have to change the business. So the business is constantly moving from a numerical perspective, and you can't build a foundation off that. You just can't.
Well, and you've piqued my interest pretty deeply here, because you've suggested a bunch of things that I shouldn't do, most of which I quite was assuming I was going to do, like, I would take last year's sales and copy them forward into, you know, 12 columns for 12 months this year and maybe tweak them a little bit. And that's, like, apparently not the right thing to do. Okay, so what should I do?
Well, first and foremost, you do want to get what that end target goal is. And you want to know where the there and the then. Where are you going? Where are you heading? And then you start to back that in from that point back into where you are currently. And it's a lot of the standard things everybody knows how to do. Okay, what's our price points for our different products or services we're selling? What's the revenue goal? What's our mix we're going to have? Is it 20% product and 80% service and so forth? You know, all those little components that every CFO and every business owner knows how to do. The parts that they should include that they don't are variables that impact the what I call achievability of the forecast.
Huh.
So, and that's, when I kind of say that, I always get that reaction right there, huh. But we don't really think of forecasts as achievability. We think of it as kind of as a hopium. We're going to put a stake in the ground, we're going to hope that we make that, and then we're just going to keep adjusting month.
Well, I'm wondering if there's a difference between a forecast, which is just a prediction, and a target, which is something I'm trying to achieve. I mean, I could forecast the number of murders in a city, and then it doesn't mean I'm going to go out if the number's too low and go shoot some people, because my forecast isn't a target. But, of course, sometimes
right.
It is. And are we going to differentiate between those, or do you want to call them the same thing?
Yeah, no, they actually belong together. That's part of the forecasting. Getting people to a higher level of forecasting accuracy is bringing an alignment and an integration of all these things. So you definitely
okay.
are going to have a target, and you use the forecast to kind of build your flight plan or your sailing chart towards that target. And the key is to bring in these achievability variables. An example of one is what I call the average working days in the month. Now most people planning a forecast will say, oh, there's 22 working days in a month. And the reality, there isn't. Not every month is 22 days. As a matter of fact, there's fewer months that are 22 than there are that are 20 or 21. And you might say, well, it's only one day, it doesn't matter. But when you start to look at a day with 8 hours of work, and so you say you got 22 days, and that's 8 hours of work. You got 176 hours in a month to work. Great. But let's really look at the reality of what are the actual working days in a month. In any given month, you might have a holiday in there for your business, that your business might be closed. You certainly have people that have vacation days. There's a certain percentage of sick days and miscellaneous days that people meet. Some people leave early
sure.
because they need to head out, you know, for their kids' play or whatever the case may be. So there's a lot
yeah.
of days.
Okay. Yeah. Even getting from, you know, if I say 22 for all my months and a couple of them are 20, I'm already 10% off.
Exactly.
Oops.
Exactly. Yeah. And then so people say, oh, geez, I'm not making my forecast. We're not tracking. What do we need to do? Then they go back in, they fudge the numbers, and then they, you know, that ripple effect. They make decisions based off that forecast that touch every aspect of the business, from their hiring to their product and service mix to their strategy they use in sales and marketing. Their suppliers. I mean, it is a profound ripple effect, and people don't really relate to business forecasts like that. They relate to it as a spreadsheet, I'm going to put numbers on it, okay, this is what we're going to do, and then they set it, and they go perform for the month, and they come back and see how they did the forecast. When it's really, it's a far more powerful foundation and anchor for the business with that ripple effect.
Wow,
so,
okay.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. And I'm a crazy math person and numbers person, so I love the story numbers tell me. And I try to, as best as I can, you know, there's the human fudge factor we all have. I try as best as I can to be truthful in working with those numbers. And when you get truthful around the average working days in a month, at most it's 18. At most.
Really?
When I look at, yes. We're not, yeah. So 22 to 18, there's four less days right there.
Yeah, that's a 20% difference.
Yep. And that's the you know, a huge catalyst. When I go into companies, well, I see that more than 98% of them don't have a forecast that's even achievable because they're 4 days off just at the get-go.
Oh, boy. Okay. That's a little daunting. What else am I doing wrong?
Yeah. Well, the beautiful part is, you know, 18 is a nice magic number to use. It's still kind of on the cusp, so be careful with that. I typically recommend anywhere from 14 to 16 when I work with companies. But I have a pretty sophisticated formula and way of figuring all this kind of stuff out for people that gives them a little more insight into the precise number that they should be using. So the good news is it's an easy fix. The bad news is most people don't think about it.
Sure.
So another key variable or achievability component that I talk to a lot of companies about is productivity, the actual hours of productivity a human being has when they're in that role at a business. And,
yeah.
Again, this, you know, another area we think, oh, we come to work for 8 to 9 hours, we're getting 8 to 9 hours of productivity out of them. And the reality is, you know, we know we're not. We know that we individually don't perform at that level. A lot of companies will forecast to about 75% of an hour, so 45 minutes. I see a lot of companies that include that in their forecast, and that's a fairly accurate number. But again, when you start to look at all the little components that make up a day from lunch, it's not just an hour for lunch, because people will spend 10 to 15, sometimes 30 minutes in conversations and going around and soliciting people to go to lunch and preparing for lunch. So you got your 30 minutes there, you've got an hour for lunch, and then they'll also do the same thing when they come back. They'll come back, they might grab their toothbrush, go brush their teeth, how was lunch, oh, it was great, do a little bit of socializing, sit down, bam, you're 2 hours instead of one.
I mean, shouldn't I just fire these people and hire people who work harder?
Yes, right. You can't, because we're all human beings. We all do it.
I guess our touchstone here is realism and admitting what is, rather than trying
yeah.
to use the model to pretend that things are a certain way.
And that's it. That's the cornerstone of an achievability-based forecast, is you just have to sit in reality. And it gives you more to work with. I mean, companies, I worked with a $40 million medical device company on the average working days in a month. And they were sitting at 22. We took them down to 14, which is a 36% reduction in the available working days in a month. As a result of that, we ended up completely shifting their strategy. We reduced their sales team by 73%.
Wow.
And we moved them from an outside selling mechanism to an inside selling mechanism. So they had a lower cost of acquiring customers, less overhead for selling staff, and they had a 28% increase in revenue.
Just because they were forecasting, they went from forecasting sort of like optimistically to the point of absurdity to really being realistic, that shifted the strategy and that grew their profit 28%.
You got it. Revenue
okay.
went up 28%. Yeah.
Revenue up 28%. All right.
Yep. So, So then you look at their productivity hours, as we were just talking about, and you start looking at that and you say, wow, you know, it's not really 45 minutes in an hour. Because there's also the components where the human brain can only focus 2 to 4 minutes on a particular thought before it will actually kind of stick out. You'll daydream, so to speak, and then it'll come back. And you might not even recognize it. As we sit here and we just type away and do our own thing, we might not even notice that blip of checking out and coming back.
Okay. How is that relevant?
Yeah. What's that?
How is that relevant?
Because when you start to take the focus ability, you can only focus on a task for about 20 minutes before you have to have a change of focus, which is usually paper moving around where you become unproductive. So all of these become items that aren't productive time that move the business forward because the person isn't truly working on their job.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's not that they're not working on their job deliberately. They're just being human beings. So,
okay.
You are
so they're taking a break or stretching or looking out the window or,
yep.
you know, every 20 minutes
those.
They have to kind of fidget.
Mm-hmm. You got it. So that takes it from 45 minutes down to about 30 to 36 minutes. So,
wow.
You know, doesn't sound like a lot of time, but when you start adding it up and you work with it, you will get profound impact like you've seen with, like I described with that medical device company.
I'm starting to feel better about some of my less productive days.
Yeah.
All right.
And there's nothing wrong with any of this, right? It's just how we are as people, as human beings. It's our coping, our natural coping mechanisms, and it's healthy.
I'm just wondering why I'm feeling a lot of resistance right now to accepting that I've got a 36 minute minutes of productivity in my hour, and I've got 16 productive days in a month.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't feel right. I don't even want to write that down. I feel like I'm like betraying something by doing that. You must get that kind of resistance.
Completely natural, and. And the thing to keep in mind, you know, we're not talking about each individual person. There's obviously, everybody functions at a different level of efficiency and effectiveness. And there'll be some that are lower, some that are higher. So what we're looking for from a forecasting perspective is what's the average. And in forecast, always better to be a little under. So if you don't, if 36 feels too unrealistic, 45 maybe is a little bit, you know, is the standard and is a little too high, pick something in the middle.
All right. So, let's see. So I'm doing a couple of things now. I'm getting serious about my forecasting. I'm not just going to roll up last year's actuals to be this year's hoped for plus, 10% growth, I hope. And I'm not going to assume 22 working days in a month. I'm assuming maybe 16 or 18. And I'm not assuming an hour of productivity per hour or even 45 minutes. Maybe it's more like 40 or 36.
Mm-hmm.
What are some other things that I can do to really make my forecast more accurate?
So the next part that I usually work on with businesses is, okay, now we understand where we're going. We've got the big target. We have how many days of productivity. We know how many hours of productivity. Now we have to say, okay, put that into your forecast model, all the standard stuff that everybody does, and then we have to look at what does that mean on a day-to-day basis? What are the types of daily actions that we need to take and how many of them we need to do? So let's just take the sales team, for example. We need to figure out how many phone calls would the sales team need to make based on certain other variables like contact ratio, close ratio, and other components to achieve the forecast that we've set in place based on all these assumptions and these components.
Okay,
the daily
sure.
number, yep, standard stuff, everybody says. But again, you know, if you're working off 22 days and you're working off a 45-minute hour, all of a sudden they're going to be able to make more phone calls in any given time frame. When you go back, and, see, and when you go into reality of, say, 18 or 16 days and maybe a 36 to 40-minute hour of productivity, now they're not going to be making as many phone calls. So,
yeah, but that forecast might track reality a whole lot better.
Exactly, yes.
Okay.
You might find out that it's not achievable. See, that's
mm-hmm.
a beauty of forecast. It should be a modeling tool. It should help you, if you're putting all these components in, when you get down to that day-to-day action line item of how many calls per day, how many orders per day, you'll be able to see if it's achievable, because if you do the formulas and the daily actions is 200 phone calls, well, no human being can make 200 phone calls.
Well,
so
a lot of them are voicemails.
That's still pretty quick. It's still usually a little over two minutes to leave a voicemail, but good point. It tells you something isn't working in your forecast, and that's the beauty of these achievability variables is it's telling you whether or not your forecast is going to be doable. Because most people never say, oh, wow, I wonder how many phone calls that is per salesperson, and start to actually work down the day-to-day metrics of, well, how long does it take to leave a voicemail, how long does it take to have an introductory call, and all those components. And it is
sure.
just profound when you put the big math formula together.
Yeah.
It's in a second. You're like, oh, we never could achieve this if we wanted to.
Well, you know, you're reminding me of the very first time I did forecasting. I was 15 years old. And I was in a club, and I wanted to earn the jacket that was the prize for selling Christmas candles door-to-door. And I had sold a certain number. I was way short of what I needed, and I was getting discouraged. So I started doing math in my head of, well, how many doors have I knocked on, and how many candles have I sold? And I found out I was getting one sale per seven doors. Well, I could just project forward into how many doors in an hour, and therefore, at that close ratio, okay, I need to walk for two more days and I have the jacket. And all of a sudden it went from this, like, oh, I'll never get there, to, oh, I see.
Yeah.
And boom, it just took all the worry out of it. I just had to, you know, show up and do my best and maybe grow my close ratio a little bit and just keep knocking on doors. And I got that jacket. I wore it for 10 years. I loved that thing.
It's still hanging in your closet.
I finally wore it out. but I'm older than 25. And yes. And I remember just how much easier it was once I realized that I knew exactly, I now knew mathematically by looking at my past and projecting into the future exactly how many door knocks, how much time I needed, and I would hit my goal.
And that's such a beautiful illustration of this. It's the power in taking your forecasting to the next level of accuracy. It gets rid of the stress, it drops off. It actually will give you back time. Imagine all the time that's spent with executives and their finance team reworking numbers before every board meeting every month and you know, getting the investors. I mean, I've been part of those, and it's just draining and troubling, and it's a painful experience. You get
mm-hmm.
time back. You reduce your stress when you get these components in place. You achieve your goals, which, hi, doesn't everybody want to achieve what they set out to do? And it gives... It motivates the people. It gives people an opportunity to make more money because they're achieving their goals. And I mean, it's a pretty amazing thing to witness as you see it all shift and turn around. It's really quite profound.
Give me an example of how that's. I mean, because honestly, it sounds so dry and academic and mathematical and abstract and kind of almost do. I mean, nobody besides the CFO is really going to look at this stuff, right? And you're telling me that it's transformational for a lot of people. Have you seen that? For yourself, really?
Yeah, no, I see it quite often. It's kind of one of those things where you just kind of have to witness. But, you know, when I go to companies that are in these situations that require me to look at their forecasting, it's a pretty distressed situation typically. I mean, you can feel the anxiety in the company. You can see the way people are carrying themselves when they walk down the hall. Their shoulders are forward. They kind of have this certain look on their face. You can tell by how they're interacting with their job. You know, if they're an inside salesperson and they're supposed to be on the phone and I observe them making maybe 5 calls in 25 minutes, something's wrong. How they relate when they sit at their desk, how they're talking to other people. When you just talk to them and find out how's the job going, what kind of success are you having, you see that, and then you go in and you elevate the accuracy of your forecasting, and inevitably you see results very quick. I mean, within 2 weeks, companies will typically see a complete shift. They'll see better performances. The attitudes will shift, and you'll start to see people be excited. They'll be on the phone more. You'll hear a buzz in the room. The department heads will play better together in the sandbox when they're in the meeting trying to figure out how much product they should build or buy to take care of their customers so that, you know, inventory is managed. I mean, it's a ripple effect. It's always going to be a ripple effect no matter what you're doing with that forecast. And it is academic and mechanical at the onset with the numbers, but when you start to work that out into the business, it brings a levity, and I don't know, it's just really hard to...
You know, it makes so much sense, though, because, I mean, we know that, you know, having a goal and missing it is demotivating and demoralizing, and having a goal and hitting it is exciting and energizing. Mm-hmm. And having an accurate forecast and then saying, okay, I'm going to hit, you know, 47 will be my, whatever my number is, whatever that means. 47 is my target, and I hit 47 or 48. I'm like, yeah! And then I've got a good forecast, and I can say, okay, what do I need to change in my behavior to drive that number up? And is that change realistic? It's like, well, actually, no, we're kind of maxed right there at 47, 48. I mean, you could set it at 50, but I don't think we can make it based on what we're doing. Something would have to change. What can we change? And that's a more productive conversation than
Absolutely.
Just trying to, like, make people work harder or faster. To me, that's not helpful.
I've watched salespeople. I've watched the lowest producing salesperson for an inside sales team for this is a supply chain company back on the East Coast, and their lowest performing salesperson turned around within, I would say it was about 3 weeks, give or take, maybe a little bit longer, from being last to being the top performing salesperson.
Wow. What did it do differently in terms of behavior?
Well, the behavior, I mean, the results, because the forecasting was accurate, when we went to the sales team, we said, okay, here's your new performance goals. Here's how many phone calls you should make a day. Here's how long you should be on those phone calls. And again, those are guidelines, but the number of phone calls that they needed to make went dramatically down. So they didn't. So when they looked, I don't know if she like just psychologically would look at the number and felt like, wow, oh, I can do that. And you know, we started working with all the components of the performance the day to day actions, and she just got energized. It was just profound. And then we had somebody else who went the other direction, which is the reality of it, right? Somebody else who looks at a small number and thinks, well, that's easy, I can do that. So they don't work as hard, and then before they know it, the day is gone, and they're not making their goals.
Yeah, you can better coach them on their performance, sure. Okay.
Yeah, you can have, you know, it's not always perfect. Like, you can roll it out, you'll see a total shift in people. So it requires a little bit different style for some people.
We're near the end of our time. I hate that time has gone so quickly. Is there anything you need to add to the what you've given us, or a final call to action that you can suggest, one thing that we can do differently? Maybe it's a mindset or a new habit. What do you suggest?
Yeah, I think if I could recommend anything to anyone, the number one is to get the average working days in the month in there into your forecast and really be honest and accurate and go a little short, meaning like instead of 18 days, maybe pick 17. If you put just that into your forecast, it will completely transform the way that you will build your business model and your strategies, and we'll get you on the right track for achieving it. I think that's one of the most key components. The second is, from more of a mental perspective, is you just have to be open that you don't have it all figured out. You know, some of my hardest situations to help turn around and shed the light on, so to speak, are those who have the most experience, who have had, you know, 20, 25 years of business or forecasting experience, or have worked with all types of sizes and industries of businesses. You know, there's always something to learn. There's always something to try. And it's important to be open that you might not have it completely figured out accurately. And then the third thing is, you know, I do workshops on this. So that's another thing, is to check out my website and see when the next workshop on this type of forecasting comes up. And we go over this in great detail and build it right into models for people.
Outstanding. Well, that's all we have time for. Lynn White has been my guest for this half hour of Tom on Leadership. You can find her at lynnmwhite.com, and we'll link to that from our website, tomonleadership.com. And I am Tom Cox with Tom on Leadership. And we thank you so much for tuning in. And we'll be back in 1 week. Thanks for listening.